Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, welcome back to our special Father's Day segment here on Circles of Change. And no greater opportunity for me than to speak with a celebrated author who's focused on, indeed, the father-son journey. So, Don Snyder, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Zara. Good to be here.
You bet. Well, we're catching up with Don in beautiful state of Maine, so let me introduce him. He's both a writer and a life adventurer, an acclaimed author of many books, several of which have received national attention and been the focus of television films. Don's work includes the memoirs The Cliff Walk and His Mother's Story of Time and Memory, and the novels Night Crossing and Fallen Angel. Don recently released a memoir that was the result of a five-year journal that documents his voyage to the hallowed golf course of St. Andrews, Scotland, to fulfill the pledge of becoming a professional caddy for his son. So for any golfers heading to Scotland today, this book gives some real inside tips and tricks from the eye of a caddy on some of the world's most iconic golf courses. And you know what? I don't even play golf, or when I do, it's more for comic entertainment for those who've invited me to play. Yet I got to tell you, Don, I found Walking with Jack every bit a profound book for dads and moms to help us wrestle with one of the toughest challenges in parenting, and that's letting go of us to let our children be who they need to be and become. So I want to thank you personally for your book.
Well, you're welcome, Zara. You sort of put your finger right on it. I mean, when I was went over to Scotland to train to become a caddy so I could be of some use to my son one day if he ever made it onto a pro tour, I was there just a very short time. And I had an experience out on the golf course. I took around a father and his son, and the boy was grown up now, headed off to graduate school in a few weeks. The father was in his 50s and had once been a really fine golfer himself. And he'd been struck down with MS so that, you know, he could barely make it around the course now. I had to help him up onto the greens. But he was in such delight watching his son play so well. And as we were making our way down the final holes, he said to me, "You know, I know this disease is progressing, and this is the last time I'll ever get to do anything like this with my son." And, you know, part of the drill, you come off the 18th green before you go by, you take a photograph of them. He handed me his camera, and as I was, you know, looking through the lens there, I saw the son reach up and touch his father's face, and I realized that he was brushing his tears away. And it dawned on me then that being a caddy in Scotland was going to be such a great privilege, you know, to be a part of someone else's story. So I was there to learn all that I could from the great Scottish caddies, but I was also keeping my eyes open for any of the truth that really matters when you know, between fathers and sons, or parents and their children, you know, really. So,
well, and I would say that you bet. Well, this wasn't your first time doing this, of course, because each of your novels and your memoirs in particular carry that element of your being on the vigilant pursuit of always the story and the story behind the story.
Right. You're after the truth as a writer. Yeah. I mean, if you're trying to bring meaningful books into the world, you're just after the important truths. And I can tell you that this story with Jack began really when he was like 5 years old. I saw it off a golf club and put it in his hands and took him out to this field, and he hit a couple of balls. And it was just in that moment, you know, we have these little babies. The first time we hold them, we fall in love with them, and we think we're going to have them forever. And then in a single moment, in a glance across the room, we realize that someday they're going to come into their own, and they're going to leave. And in that moment with Jack, when he hit the first ball he ever hit, he hit well, I thought, you know, I'm not always going to have him beside me. So I said to him, "Jack, if you ever make it to a pro tour, if you ever become good enough in this game to play in a pro tour, you take me with you as your caddy." And it was really just the desire to walk with him as far as I could in this world.
But my goodness, to have that connection and make that connection with your son at such a young age, and then to see actually his life play forward and yours as well, to come to that meeting point. I think there are many of us that might say things like that to our children, but boy, to see it actually play out for you, this is just extraordinary.
Yes, well, you have to remember, Zara, I'd had two daughters already go off to college. I had a third that was about to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I took that. It was hard for me because being a writer, you're home all the time. I was with them from the time they were born. Colleen took it in stride, but I took it pretty hard. Mm-hmm. But then when it came to be Jack's turn and the house was just growing emptier and emptier here, and he and I had sort of drifted apart, you know, the way fathers and sons do when he became a teenager, 15, 16. So I used to use this little promise as part of my narrative with him. Don't forget, Jack. No matter how angry you might be with me right now, someday I might be caddying for you. You know, it was one of those things. So it was a promise, but it was one that I used to try to draw us back together.
That's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Well, you know, of course, Don, we've got golfers that are listening, or golfer wannabes, or those who have watched others fall into the whole life of golfing. But perhaps it would beg an opportunity here for you to explain really what is the role of the caddy, because it goes so much more than just schlepping the bags.
Right, it is. It's intrinsic. You'll notice it if you're watching the U.S. Open on television. In every round of golf, for every golfer, I don't care whether it's Tiger Woods or it's somebody who's a 16 handicapper, every golf, because golf is such a difficult game, a ruinous game, really, there are moments when you begin to lose it. You begin to lose your belief in yourself. You've just hit two bad shots or just played two bad holes. And the caddy's role is really to help you believe in yourself enough just to make the shot in front of you, the one that you're facing right now. All the history has to disappear, all the bad history, and you have to make your golfer believe in himself or herself enough to make the shot. And when you think about it, that's exactly our role as parents. I mean, it didn't take long for it to dawn on me that when our children begin to lose their belief in themselves, right, that's when we have to step in as parents to remind them that they have value and that they can keep going. You know, a daughter who's sends out 50 resumes and doesn't get invited to a single interview, that's when we have to step in. And golf just happens to be, because it's such a humbling sport, because of the degree of difficulty, the caddy has that opportunity. If a good caddy, even caddying for a stranger in Scotland, every time out it's a stranger. It's, as I say, it's like a blind date. If you're a good caddy and you understand the game, well, first of all, you understand the ground. I mean, you could set me down anywhere on the old course or King's Barnes, wherever. I could tell you exactly how far it was to clear the hazards that you can see and can't see. And think of that as well as what we do as parents is what we do as caddies. We're trying to lead our shepherd our golfer to good ground, avoid the hazards, reach the good ground. And that's what we do as parents, you know, all our lives. It really never ends. So,
that's right. But I have to say, though, you know, it's one thing to caddy for strangers. In other words, mm-hmm. people that you hadn't met before. And I'm certain there's amount of thrill seeking to find out who are you going to get matched with when they walk out of the caddy shack or you walk out of the caddy shack. Mm-hmm. But it's something totally different to caddy for someone you so are emotionally connected with, let alone it is your son. Right?
Well,
I mean, that's a tremendous leap that doesn't provide the safety of, okay, I'm just in and out after this grueling day of doing the courses at St. Andrews.
Right. It took me a few tournaments. When we finally met up on Jack's Pro Tour at the Adams Tour in Houston, mm-hmm. Texas, and there we are, you know, living together for 4 months in a single motel room, you know, without killing each other. It was amazing. And talk, you start out talking about golf, and you end up talking about life so many times. But right, on the golf course, it took me a couple of tournaments to realize that Jack did not need a father out there.
Right,
I mean, how absurd would that be? He would have been the only person on the tour whose father was walking beside him. What he needed was a competent caddy. And I had been very, very well trained in Scotland. I mean, I won't pretend to know even a third of what those great caddies over there. You got boys that have been caddying for 23 years, mm-hmm. and they've forgotten more about caddying than I can learn. But I learned a lot from them. The Scottish caddies, when they realized that I was the old guy there who was on a mission to someday caddy for his son on a pro tour, they taught me everything they possibly could. So, yeah, I had to earn Jack's trust just like you do each time you're out there on the first tee with a stranger. You have two or three holes where the equation has to take place, where you have to know, you have to quickly ascertain your golfer's strengths and weaknesses and then begin to help that person play his best round. It has to happen in the first couple holes, and then the trust builds in. And, yeah, it was the same with my son. I had to see him as just a golfer, and he had to see me as just a caddy.
Boy, that's got to be a lot of self-talk then, to tell you, okay, this part of my board of directors is excused for the day while I'm gearing up to be 100% caddy. The other thing that, of course, when I'm reading, by the way, for our listeners who may have just tuned in, we're speaking with Don Snyder. His book is called Walking with Jack, A Father's Journey to Become His Son's Caddy. And again, as I mentioned in my quick quip there, the only time I play golf is if I absolutely had to, and people understood that I cheated in order to sustain my own ego in the process. But what caught my attention so quickly when I started reading your book, though, is the metaphors you drew back to your own career of becoming a writer. And in fact, Don, you said, you coined this phrase called, you feel yourself dropping to the deep down world. Could you share that explanation to our listeners about your writing and then how that equally applied to caddying?
Right. It was something I couldn't have anticipated when I went over to Scotland and began training as a caddy. I mean, it seemed, as a writer for me, the only time I've ever been able to really reach a certain truth about life is when I was able to leave this world behind and drop down deep enough in my concentration to come to some understanding. Who knows where it comes from, but I can remember the morning when I realized and wrote the words, and I think they're somewhere in this book, we can't count the ways we can lose the people we love most in this world, but usually when we look back on it, we realize it was our own fault. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, that to me strikes me as true. When you see something like that, when you learn something like that, or when it comes into your head, you realize instantly that it's true. And when you're a caddy, in order to be really, really competent, you have to close out all the rest of the world, the wind, the weather, all of it, the distractions, and you have to be able to bear down on this person beside you, the ball that he's using, the way his hands are gripping the club, the way he takes the club back, the way he turns at the bottom of his swing, all of it, you incorporate it so deeply that you can't, that it's almost you out there playing, mm-hmm. though you're never, you know, hitting the ball. So it's just a level of concentration. And you watch the best caddies at work, and they'd be joking around until those seconds before the golfer's about to address the ball to make his swing. And then they're in another world. They're just in another world, and they have to be. That's the world where you try to achieve some kind of, well, brilliance, I suppose.
So did you know from your own experience of having been a writer and going into the deep down to engage with your characters, you know, your novels, as well as the characters that are part of your memoirs, of course, about your own family experiences, did you know that you're stepping into the being a caddy was going to take you into the deep down then?
I had no idea, Zara. I didn't know enough of what was involved. You know, I understood the game of golf, and I figured, well, you know, I can get by on that. But no, that's just a part of it. It really does require a depth of concentration. If I'm caddying for you, first of all, you and I may be talking as we're walking down the fairway, but I'm counting off the paces under my breath, in my head. How many paces have we taken from the tee box? So when we get to the ball, I know how many more paces how many yards ahead of us that bunker that we can't see comes into play. You have to be concentrating so deeply or you fall behind. And if once you fall behind, you're not of much use to your golfer. The caddy has to always be a step or two ahead.
And boy, for our listeners, huh, what about the role of parents? Isn't that true? But I would ask us, though, one of the real humbling parts of being a parent, though, is to do what you're suggesting without judgment, and to do it in a learning way, and also remember it's your child that's taking those steps, not you. So your thought about, though, that popular term that's out there today of helicoptering parents, because part of life is just letting them skin their knees or having a bad shot.
Well, exactly. Letting them go, letting them be the people that they're destined to be and that they want to be. Well, the book is, if nothing else, it's very, very honest, and you can plot my course through that whole thing. I mean, I was, it was very tough for me not to continually impose my own dream upon Jack. I had to realize that this was his journey, not mine. Yes, I was standing beside him, walking beside him, and in some ways leading the way as the caddy. Mm-hmm. One of the things I always did as a caddy, and it was an old Scottish caddy who taught me this, is the way I got to really know the old course, for example, was to go out there at the end of the day when there was no one there and kick a ball from the first tee to the 18th green. One old Donnie taught me that, to feel the contours of the ground so that the ground becomes part of you. Well, before every course that we played in Houston, I would do that the day or 2 days before. I'd go out there and roll the ball. And sometimes, for me as a father, I was adopting the dream for myself when I had to learn that it was not about me. It was about Jack had to make each shot. It was Jack's journey. I was beside him, and that was good enough. I learned that was the privilege, just to be beside him.
This is beautiful. Well, I have to tell you, the idea, of course, of walking the courses beforehand. My background is automotive and was involved in racing. You always walk the racetrack before the event. You just always did. There was this physical connection with the ground, the environment. And then lo and behold, what did I do yesterday? But my daughter, she's 15, she just got her ears pierced. But you know what? I went to the mall first and checked out all the different options before we went to the mall. So,
That
idea of test driving it, but yet at the same time, she made the choice of which store she wanted to go to get her ears pierced.
Right, and then when we get a little older, Sarah, I mean, if we live long, and let's hope we all live long enough so that it's our children who are leading the way. Mm-hmm. They are leading the way for us in the next part of the journey. The idea, though, is to see each moment that we have with our children as a privilege. I mean, I realized something on this journey, this 5 years, that you reach a point in your life when you can look back and you realize all we have is just a collection of moments. That's all we have. We may have years, and yes, there are some days when they're little that seem interminable, I remember afternoons when all four of them would be crying at the same time. You think, wow,
this wasn't in the brochure.
Right, but when you look back now, you see it's just that collection of moments, and I'm talking about the moments of being, when we were with them at the right time, where we had the chance to really convey something important, what matters in this world, whether it's, about, it's always a life lesson, and those moments are very, very rare. They're few. There are only a few that we have in our lives.
That's well, part of your story.
And Zara, let me just say this. And one of the people ask, what is it about golf that engenders these relationships? It's all about, the truth of the matter is it's the architecture of the game. Most of the time, you're just walking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's
you
right.
Think you spend very little time actually hitting the ball. You're just walking. And so there it is. I mean, I spoke with a woman yesterday who remembered this round of golf she played with her father 57 years ago in India. And she said to me, I can still remember every hole and everything we talked about. It's got that sort of magic to it, that quality to it.
I would think also there's also a tremendous amount of safety in the fact that a lot of the conversations you're having are side by side. You aren't necessarily across the table or eyeball to eyeball. So there's some freedom and some safety in even your own solitude of being in the greater outdoors together.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, the architect. Absolutely, Czar. I mean, I can remember nights in Houston when Jack and I, you know, we'd get on each other's nerves. We were barely talking to each other, and we'd go out to a driving range. And so he's there, and I'm behind him. We're both hitting balls. Yeah, we're carrying on this conversation, which is so much easier because we don't even have to look at each other.
Right, right. Don't we know
that?
You know,
and it's very, very true. Very, very true.
Well, I know quite often when we have authors on shows, they opt to do a reading with us. I didn't stage it up with you beforehand. So if you don't mind, may I do a reading and you could react to that?
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Very good. This was a statement, of course, again, your book is one that right in the middle of the paragraph, something profound like jumps out at me. And so this was one that it was about, as you were definitely bringing us into the epicenter of the messages, you said, "As parents, I think we cross a line where we start needing our kids more than they need us. While I watched him practice, I began to see what he meant. He didn't need a father to be worrying about out on the golf course. If he was going to play this game better than he had ever played it before and move up the leaderboard as the tour progressed throughout the winter, he needed me to be a caddy who lived up to the caddy's code to show up, keep up, and shut up." So I found that we start needing our kids more than they need us, that tipping point. That something you saw happen, or was this a combination of things? Of what flipped it, do you think, that you saw that profound sense about yourself and him?
I can't even say. I mean, I know that it was a moment. I know that it was a moment on the golf course when maybe it was just me losing my belief in myself, you know, as a caddy, as a father, and waiting for Jack to confirm something, you know, that would draw us back together. You know, this happens in life. We need our children more than they need us at certain times, and it's wonderful when they sense that, when they become people in their own right and they sense that and they respond. And I certainly had those times in Houston. I mean, I was a long way from home, and I was the only father out there on the tour with his son, and I was 60 years old now, and you know, and you start to doubt yourself sometimes. The thing about golf is, as I said, it's a humbling game. The Scottish understand it better than the Americans. They know in that brutal weather over in Scotland that the game of golf was never meant to be more than a test of endurance and a lesson in humility. They know that. But, you know, yeah, I think there is that transition for parents and children. For so many years, they rely on you for everything and need you for everything, and then all of a sudden, there it is, you need them. If you've done your job well,
you want that point.
You get it back, and and you reach that point, and you sort of revel in it in a way.
Right. We're speaking with Don Snyder. His latest book is called Walking with Jack, A Father's Journey to Become His Son's Caddy. We mentioned, of course, that this was actually a five-year journey, and it starts the book out with that first trip that you and Jack took together to go play one of the courses in Scotland under those horrific conditions, and then ultimately his going to college, and you're deciding kind of to maintain a distance and go become a caddy while he was doing the school thing. And then you meet back together again, of course, to go on tour. The other thing throughout this book, of course, Don, is your inclusion of your own story, multiple of your books, your own journeys of ups and downs and twists and turns, or maybe in golf terms, it's fairways and bunkers, right? But I wanted to read, if I might read another section that I could. This is near the closing of the book. Don says, "I didn't tell my wife what had been on my mind as I watched Jack hit his first drive that morning. We were almost halfway through the tour. It'd take me that long to understand that if a father spends enough time with his grown-up son, he sees what he's passed on to him. With us there was me believing all my life that I was never good enough, that as a writer I would never measure up to no matter how hard I worked, no matter what sacrifices I made. Perhaps Jack had inherited this, and in golf, without that deep, persistent belief in yourself, you always lose because the last poor shot is proof again that you're not good enough." Well, Don Snyder, thank you again for joining us here on Circles of Change. I commend your book, Absolute, to our readers, Walking with Jack, A Father's Journey to Become His Son's Caddy. And good luck watching it continue to furl and hit the charts. Don, happy...
Thank you, Zara.
That's great. Happy Father's Day.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.